Tune in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
TVWO Radio at Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
Welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is the 21st of August 2015. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and again, this is a live broadcast. We're going out live on the radio at the moment. If people want to go in the chat room, they can talk to other people that are listening or get a message to us. If people want to call in, you can use Skype to call radio.stormer. You can find all of this in the sidebar of the dailystormer.com. There's a big image of an eagle there. You can click that. That will take you to the chat room. And in there, we've got embedded players so that you can hear the radio. So please do make use of this stuff. The site doesn't just have written content. We do have radio content as well. And we make eight new podcasts a week, Radio Stormer Narrations, Truth Will Out Radio, Trad Youth Hour, and Radio Stormer Weekly with Andrew Anglin. But today it's Truth Will Out Radio, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Dennis Wise, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. How are you doing today, Dennis?
Well, I have to apologise. It hasn't been that long since I've arisen. I was working late last night. I've been working late most of the week. Starting off with a radio interview at 5 o'clock on Monday early morning, and I haven't really caught up since, but I'm here and I'm ready to go.
Oh, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. At least you're here. This is the thing. This is the important thing, you know, is trying to get here on time. You know, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, British time, but it's 8 o'clock in the morning, Eastern time. You know, we may have to jiggle around with this timing a little bit. And usually our podcast comes on at around about 6 p.m. British time, the recording of it. So maybe it might be better to move the live program to 7 o'clock British time, which would be 2 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern time. I mean, we've timed it.
Yeah, it's fine. Whenever, you know. I mean, I was never the greatest timekeeper when I had to clock in.
Yeah, I bet neither was I really. But we timed it like this because we got, we also simulcast Stormfront Radio with Don Black and Dr. David Duke's radio program as well. And they will both be on after this live broadcast if you're listening to it live. So you can just continue listening to the live radio before our Radio Stormer content comes on. But yeah, I take it you've been staying up late because you've been working on episode 10 of Communism by the Back Door. Is that right, Dennis?
Yeah, what usually happens, I mean, I don't know whether any other video maker has this problem, but I'll put the things together, and some things as I go along I'll drop and I'll bring fresh things in, and, you know, hopefully eventually it gets to a point where things start to work, and that's usually... It usually does take a couple of weeks for that to happen, and last night it did start to happen, so we're quite pleased. So it won't mean, I wouldn't have thought it'd be that long now until it's completed, because everything did kind of fall into place. It's like a bit of a jigsaw for me, but yeah, certain things worked, and I heard certain things which helped as well, so which I could put into the video.
And what's the subject matter going to be of number 10?
Well, the last one was on 9 was quite a brutal one, which was about Israel and the way they treat the Palestinians. And what I wanted to do on part 10 was kind of show the problems that Germany had about communism when eventually Hitler came to power as well. So and anybody who's listening to this, it's kind of an edited version of Benjamin Friedman's speech. And if anybody's listening, or watches that little piece what I've done, and they live in America, they'll realise exactly what's happening in America, exactly happened in Germany, and the problems they had, which eventually led to the war, you know, so just by trying to get rid of these Jews. So these Jews were in place now in America. It kind of tells you know, if you do want to get rid of them, it is a problem. But like we spoke briefly just before I came on air, there is a bit of a split which people are probably not too wary about over there in America with the Jews at the moment.
You were saying, yeah, this was a split at the time, that some of the Jews didn't particularly want there to be a state of Israel in Palestine, and the other Jews that did want there to be the state,
yeah,
the Zionists and the non-Zionists. What have you found out about that?
Well, there was quite a number in Germany what happened was, once Germany refused to get rid of Adolf Hitler, because they had the meeting in Amsterdam and they said, look, you've got to get rid of this Hitler and reinstate all the Jews, whether they're communists or not, which Germany were never going to do. So when they declared this war on, this blockade, and it was a declaration of war in 1933, because if you're going to try and starve a nation and bring it to its knees to do your bidding, it's an act of war. So when Germany refused this, obviously there were Jews in Germany, which, you know, obviously they were getting the backlash, and so they were pleading to this Zionist movement, because all the propaganda was coming out saying that, you know, people were being persecuted, all this. There were some backlash, yeah, but it was nothing like what the propaganda was giving. Even Goebbels at one point had an article in the Daily Express saying, you know, if you can show me one Jew what has been killed by this new German revolution, you win a prize, type of thing. And they sent a delegation over into Germany to check the camps, and the camps were fine. You know, people were well looked after, well fed, but of course the camps were full of communists, which of course 95%, 98% of that time were all Jews. So basically, the Jews in Germany were saying to the Zionists, just back off a little bit here, because, you know, we don't need this going on. So, but the Zionists, in their zeal to get Israel and blacken the name of National Socialism, carried on regardless.
And what was the relationship between the communists and the Zionists? Were they one and the same? Did the Jews with sort of communist leanings lean towards Zionism, or did they lean towards anti-Zionism?
Well, obviously they're both Jewish entities, but, you know, same two sides of the same coin. So you could say they may argue between themselves, but they'll all come together, you know, as Jews to fight the non-Jews. Yeah, they have some contradictions, but generally, I think they live quite comfortably with each other.
Well, I was you mentioned the camps then. I was watching a Vincent Reynard video the other day, which I recommend everybody see, this new video of Vincent Reynard's. And he was talking about the camps, and he was saying that that it was Hitler that said that we didn't want to split these families up. This is why there were old people and children that were taken to the camps, was because he didn't want to split the Jewish families up. And because if they had their families there with them, then they would be working harder. And they ridiculed this idea that they were exterminating them, because they needed them for the war effort. And this is why their families were there. And of course, today they say, well, you know, why did they remove these children and women? Because they couldn't have been working. It must have been to exterminate them. But no, it was actually a humanitarian thing to remove the whole families together. It's like Donald Trump is asked today, you know, well, what about the families of these immigrants? And he says, well, the whole families can stay together and be removed out of the country at the same time. You know, we're not going to leave one of them behind. We need to remove the whole lot of them. Yeah, so, you know, they were very humanitarian.
Well, the thing is, if you see the propaganda from World War One and how the Germans were eating babies, and I think, again, we talked about it last week, I mentioned something about a German nurse, picture of a German nurse or a drawing cartoon pouring some water on the floor while there's a Allied soldier gagging for a drink. And, you know, saying like a British nurse would never do this, and don't forget. All that kind of propaganda, which looks cheesy and looks childish now, was just the same in 1940 when they're coming. We obviously we're talking about the camps now in about 1933 to 36, 37. But later on, obviously, it all come again with the war, when they were saying like shrunken heads and lampshades, you know, all this. Really, it's just the same. It's a carry on from World War One, and yet people fall for it. They fell for it in World War One, and they fell for it in World War Two, and some even fall for it today, even though it's been proven the shrunken heads weren't what they was, and the lambskin was a cow, and etc.
That piece of propaganda that you're talking about is particularly shocking. It really is. I mean, I try to describe it. It's saying us British would never refuse the Germans water in the way that the Germans refused our prisoners of war water.
Exactly.
And that's exactly, yeah. You know, what happened was the Germans did feed the prisoners of war with water and food, and something like 99% of them came back healthy, and there was nothing wrong with them. And yet the Germans that were in the British care and in the Allied care were deprived entirely of food. And this propaganda that they were shown was intimating that the Germans didn't feed their prisoners of war. They didn't feed the British prisoners of war, which was a total lie, complete lie.
Mindset. Well, when about World War One, the mindset then, I mean, you've no radio, you've no television. So the mindset of the Allied soldier going over there, what's filled with these posters in the newspapers of propaganda, which, as ridiculous as they sound now, you know, in those days, you know, were accepted. So the mindset, you know, they are going over, and when they see a soldier, they're automatically thinking he eats a baby.
Yeah, it's the propaganda is still today. We've still got this negative propaganda, especially about white people. I mean, they make out that white nationalists want to kill everybody else. I mean, we've heard this recently from Alex Jones, and we've also seen just last weekend the white man march that went on in Liverpool. I mean, this was shocking, and this reminded me of what the National Socialists had to put up with at this white man march. I think there was about 100 white nationalists there, you know, looking neat, tidy, not rowdy, anything like that. And there was a couple of thousand anti-fascists, a violent red mob that were outside this train station, launching missiles at them, and you know, just wanting to kill them, basically, because they'd been whipped up into this frenzy of hatred by the media. The media had been promoting this fake letter that apparently National Action had sent to the mayor, which National Action denied. This letter was saying we're going to set fire to the city and cause all this ethnic strife. This mob just, you know, they just wanted to attack them, basically, and the march had to be called off. And it just reminded me of what the National Socialists had to put up with at the time when in 1932 there were 6 million Communist Party members, 6 million of them. What they were doing was completely illegal. They had criminal conspiracies with arms to take over the areas that they were in. They were going to kill the police. They had everything all worked out, and then to finally call in the Red Army. And this is the same thing, you know, this is a similar thing to what was going on with this march. It's like a criminal conspiracy, but instead of it being, you know, people that aren't actually in power, it's the people that are in power now that control the media, put out these lies about white nationalists. All they want to do is march.
We all know who controls the media, and Liverpool is, always has been, in my eyes, a red city. So It's not surprising that there was a big turnout of anti-fascist demonstrators. But not only that, obviously in this country, anything connected to the Nazis and Germany, even though, you know, nothing in literature saying such a thing, they automatically assume it's the Nazis on the march because of the propaganda what the papers give them. And this stirs up all this hatred, past and present. So, I mean, Oswald Mosley was another one who faced this problem down in London. You know, there was the big Jewish contingent down in, you know, West Ham and the docks and around that side. And the marches down there was always a problem. So, yeah, nothing seems to have changed. But there seems to be no outlet in this country of some kind of a sensible press for everybody. It's just one hatred from the left, which of course our friends on the media and hype up.
Well, they just want to silence all dissenting voices. And if you think about it, this is a small group. This is 100 white people that just wanted to march in a white city.
And everybody to march, yeah.
And address the public, whoever was there. You know, they just wanted to speak through a megaphone, their point of view, get their voice heard, because we hear all the time from all these other minority communities, it's fine for them to have their protests and fine to have their voice heard. But as soon as white people want to have their voice heard, you've got thousands of an unruly mob trying to attack them. And half of them were white. You know, just that are, you know, how can people not see this, that they are attacking their own people, that they've been propagandized to such an extent that they're willing to attack their own people? It's like, well, you know, somebody shooting themselves in the foot deliberately.
It is. But I mean, like, they look at somebody who has pride in their own country and their own race as a racist, which is how they've managed to twist things around. It's social engineering. And they're very good at it. They've had plenty of experience in other countries and experiments on countries which have had no idea they've been experimented on. They're very clever, these people. And, you know, you're actually doing things that you don't even know that you've been brainwashed to do, which is what brainwashing is.
Well, part of it, I mean, if you actually explain to people what National Socialist policies were, and you don't tell them that they're National Socialist policies, people say, exactly. Well, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, wonderful, yeah. But this is the greatness of Adolf Hitler, you see, because in them days, obviously, especially in the early days when they set out 6 million communists in Germany, and so all the rallies that they had, especially in the early days, didn't muster more than a couple of hundred. So they were always outnumbered by the people turning up to wreck the party. But the greatness of Adolf Hitler was not only did they overcome that in a physical sense, but later in a political sense, because a lot of these communists were converted to National Socialism. And that can't have been an easy task, nor was the physical thing, you know, still existing all the time under all them threats and still didn't have that will to go to these parties and get the message over. Incredible feat for that group of people. Wonderful, wonderful, brave group of people in those early days that suffered lots of death. A lot of members were killed and attacked by these communists, and yet still won the day to come through. And that's a lot of people, if they did revise in that area, you would just see just how tough and how strong-willed they were to get to the point to actually take the country over and govern it.
Well, they had a hell of a lot to overcome. You mentioned the social engineering just then, but back then that this was going on as well. I mean, looking in this Communism in Germany booklet, which I'm going to start doing a series of narrations on, which start today. Looking in there, they're saying that was at the same time as setting up these conspiracies to attack the population and destroy the infrastructure, which they called the workers rising, at the same time they were promoting all this immorality and sexual decadence in the theater and in the with all the prostitution and calling for lowering age of consent or all this sort of thing. And as we know, that when in the areas that they did take power, they legalized incest and legalized pedophilia in the actual German areas where they did take power. And of course this is exactly what they're doing today with the social engineering. I think you've been looking into some of this a bit this week as well, haven't you, Dennis?
Yeah, well, the first wave of attack is the sexual attack, where India's going through it at the moment, where you know, the pornography is used, and that takes the mind off everybody. You know, I mean, instead of, you know, sorting out true problems in the country, everyone's been occupied with all this pornography which is being shown, which Israel did exactly the same to Palestine. and it's been used in America and in Germany, where they just flood the you know the TV and the theatres with all this pornography, and it's used as a weapon. That's usually the first weapon. That's usually then followed by usury. Whereas, for example, wages at some point in the 70s dropped to where people couldn't manage to actually live on that particular wage, even if two families were working. It's much the same today, really. And so what they did, they brought the credit card out. So people are under that illusion that they've still got money. But what's actually happened is they're borrowing money and paying that usury. And the same today is with the wonga. When people can't afford to live on the wage that they work on, or to get paid at work, then they'll go to these quick lending things like you know the wonga on TV. And quick quid is another one. So this is all social engineering, and it's amazing that it's so noticeable. And unless you know you're guided in that direction, which I have been in the past couple of weeks by E. Michael Collins, who does just fascinating to listen to. It's fascinating to listen to, and especially if you're a Catholic as well, because he actually are a Christian, and he actually explains how they brought down you know the Catholics in America and the situation how the Jews are in control today. Fascinating, and they use these techniques. Like I said, India at this moment in time is going through this particular attack. So you know we've got low wages over there. They've got people working on telephones for pennies, and so no doubt we'll have to go to you know get a credit card, go and borrow some money. They've repeatedly done this through history through various means.
And of course, one of the things we're also seeing in India is lots of gang rapes happening, which never happened before.
You hit the nail on the head there, yeah. I mean, how many rapes have we heard about in India since all this started?
Now, it's due to this pornography. And I think what he was talking about, E. Michael Jones talks about, or one of the most famous sound bites of his is when he's talking about the Israelis warring in Lebanon and Palestine, and at the same time as dropping the bombs, they hijack the television signal and blast pornography out. So pornography is a weapon. It's not freedom to be watching pornography. It is a weapon, and it distracts people. And when you've got a society that promotes or pornification of everything, everything that you see on television, you've got bare flesh, you've got younger and younger people wearing revealing clothes, young girls, you know, everything has become pornified. And as a man, you know that if you see, you know, this flesh that's on display, you are distracted by it. So when you've got everything that's pornified, man is constantly distracted. Whether he knows it or not, he's distracted from what he would normally be thinking about. In effect, it hijacks your own mind. You know, it's hijacking people from what they would normally be thinking about. If we didn't have all this porn everywhere, then, you know, they wouldn't be able to get away with what it is that they're doing. I also think it encourages a wanting of immediate gratification of desire, which feeds into the credit cards and the easy loans, because it's immediate gratification. It's not putting things aside and saving up for whatever you want. It's, I want to have it now. And it's like the immediate gratification from watching pornography. I'm sure there's a link between the two.
Yeah. Listen, there definitely. I mean, Germany was the same. Germany was covered in pornography, which is one of the reasons you know the Germans revolted against this Jewish culture, which was alien to German culture. And then you look back into the 60s in America, and there it was again. You know, this sexual freedom of revolution, and then came feminism. These are all social engineering weapons which break up the. Break up the family, you know, bring wages down, get the kids into, you know, where they're coming home from school to watch MTV because they have no mother there, the mothers and fathers at work, you know, and then they're indoctrinated with all this on MTV, occult music. It all stems from that. It's well, we all know who's to blame, don't we?
It's like pouring oil on a fire, this pornography. What men used to do is they used to fight against this desire, this carnal desire. So, they didn't want to have these carnal desires because they wanted to be going out and discovering the world and creating things. Once you get into this desire, yeah, this concupiscence.
Let's not forget, then we go down the route of decadence. All of a sudden, what's happened today in America and in the West in general is that what used to be wrong is now right. What a generation or two or three generations ago you would say was absolutely a no-no is today accepted, and people are accepting that it's right. One of them being homosexuality. Any moral Christian society at one stage, there would have been no way that you would have seen homosexual being transmitted over on the TV airways. But today, you can sit down, have your tea, and I'll switch on. For those viewers in America who don't know what Coronation Street is, it's a soap over here, which is supposed to reflect society. It's been going for nearly 50 years, and there's no program that good, I can assure you. But you can switch the TV on, and all of a sudden you've got two guys kissing on TV, and it's becoming accepted. And it's not so much accepted with our generation, it's the next generation that after, because each generation it gets watered down until it's acceptable. And today, if you criticize homosexuals, you have a law against you which stops ordinary people with morals actually speaking out. And so you've got this illusion now that all the country have suddenly accepted all this rainbow rubbish and that it's right to be a homosexual. There's nothing wrong with it. And it'll get taught in the schools, and probably is being taught already.
Well, it is being taught in the schools. One of the things that they've been cheering about this week on the news is the fact that a third of school children now don't know whether they're straight or homosexual. They would prefer not to say. And they think this is a wonderful achievement. Is that our young people are so confused that they don't know what they prefer, which genitals they prefer. That's what they've been taught. They can pick and choose it.
There's a time in a young person's life where he's confused anyway, because he's growing up, and things are developing. But what they're doing is, that child at that right time, they can guide them down any line they want. And that's exactly what they're doing. Where normal people go through certain questions of life and sexuality and things like that, and eventually come out the other end as a normal kid. They'll go for that kid at that time and guide them down the other road. And they know what they're doing. It's, like I say, this social engineering is an art to it. And when you're controlling the education, you're controlling the media, everything seems to be right, what they're saying. And so as soon as we come along and say, hey, listen, this is wrong, we're the old fuddy-duddies and, we've got things all wrong. This modern way of thinking is the right way to go. So there's a battle going on there for the hearts and minds of our children.
And once you separate divine order to things, this is what happens. Once you stop thinking that there's an absolute good and an absolute evil, and that there's a divine order and right and wrong, and some things are always going to be wrong, once you take that away and you say, well, man can decide what's right and what's wrong for him, then you can say that what's right and wrong is dictated by the circumstances at the time. And once you say that, then circumstances change all the time, and you can say that the definition of right and wrong changes all the time, and eventually it turns around to where we've got it now, where wrong is right and right is wrong, which is what's being taught in the schools, that they can, that they, it doesn't matter if they like girls or if they like boys, they can just mess around with each to decide which one that they prefer. And of course, once they do that, they get a little bit older, they realise the gravity of what they've done, and they end up committing suicide, or they end up being stuck that way, or they end up feeling terrible about themselves for the rest of their life. And it's all just to please these perverts that wish to actually do that to our children, the same perverts that call for lowering of the age of consent all the time. I mean, you don't get young people calling for lowering the age of consent. It's only these older homosexuals that call for that. And they couch it in, oh, this is children's rights. We're caring about the young people that we want to do this. They haven't got given any rights to children. The rights of it for a child to be abused and have his ability. You know, children can't give consent. It's only the parents that can give consent, because a child is innocent until they take their innocence away.
A paedophile believes. I was listening to a member of PI being interviewed by an Australian interviewer a few weeks back, and they actually believe that a child of 10 can give consent. How crazy is that? And this is why they went for the lowering age of to 4, to be honest, at one point, but that's not going to get anywhere. But they are pushing for the age of consent to drop to 10, and they're also pushing for the for any child what complains of being abused. If there's no evidence, like say if they've got photographs, for instance, and it doesn't look like that the child is actually in any danger or any harm, then it's dismissed. You know, it's not classed as abuse, and this is what they're trying to get through. Harriet Harman is one of these people who is leading the way, trying to get this legislation through.
Well, you can shoot holes in that argument straight away if they say, if there's no evidence the child didn't like it, he wasn't harmed. I mean, there's emotional damage there, psychological damage, but you could inject them with heroin. They would like that as well, but it would still be doing them harm.
Well, they're playing with drink, but at the end of the day, their argument is they're only later suffering this... these effects because of the media saying it was bad, and then they throw back the memory to that time, and then they're affected. But if the media never mentioned it in the first place, they carry on their life normally. That's how crazy they think, these people.
Well, it's once they become an adult and realise that they've had their innocence stolen from them like that. That's the damage. And they talk about it being the rights of a child. The rights of a child should be the right of a child to be born. The right of a child to have a family, you know, a mother and a father there for their entire life. That's what our ancestors all had. You know, they had a mother and a father that for their life.
It really annoys me, because that weakest target in society is a child, and the left in these homes run by, you know, the governments, whatever, the left defenceless, and that's the most annoying and angry I can get with over that, because they should be protected in these places, but they're actually there to be victims to a lot of these elites. You know, it's come out to like Edward Heath now, it's come out to a few others, Jimmy Savile, but they've all died. It only comes out after they die, and that's probably because they're all Masons, and a Mason is sworn not to, you know, go against another Mason with their oath. So they'll probably defend people already under suspicion until they die. Then it usually comes out, which again is annoying, because in a way they've obviously got away with it.
So the very people that shout the most about defending the rights of children are the ones that are the most dangerous to them. That's the way that it seems to me. Like you say, Harriet Harman, advocating the lowering of the age of consent and advocating this paedophile information exchange, and high up in the government advocating this. And Ted Heath, you've got these court cases going on now, but he wasn't at the time claiming to be speaking for children and trying to make it easier for paedophiles, which is what Harriet Harman was doing. See, a lot of these people will move into those areas. These pedophiles will move into these areas, so where they can do this to children. This is a sickening thing. It's like that woman that was a carer at Little Ted's nursery a couple of years back that was abusing kids. It's shocking. But then again, you know, you should be looking after your children yourself. This is why, you know, mothers should be at home. They shouldn't be out working. They should be looking after their children. It's like old people when they have foreign nurses looking after the old people that attack them. It's the natural thing is for your family to look after your family.
Well, the thing is that Leon Britton, who was in charge of the police at that time under the Thatcher government, was given the job of investigating the paedophile ring at the Monday Club down in London at the hotel, where there's a list of people on this, some interesting names on this list, which is on the internet. And what happened there was they knew the police was going to come and raid the place, so the woman at the hotel wrote down all these names, and some are false names, but you know, it's come to light who they actually are. And you know, Leon Britton was given the task to investigate this Monday Club, which included MPs and celebrities, and yet then suddenly the papers went missing, and then it comes out he was one of them anyway, and now he's died, he's buried, and you know, unmarked grave, and etc., and he's swept under the carpet. But surely at that time, you've got Edward Heath who's playing these silly games, you've got Leon Britton under the Thatcher government playing these silly games, there's people in Cameron's government which have been quietly removed from the scene. So it's kind of like it's an ongoing thing which these high-powered politicians who think they're above the law love to play, you know, unfortunately. Well, again, every week I say to you, Sven, give me the gun, I'll fire the bullet.
Yeah, there was a D-notice put on this when Labour were in power. There were a lot of MPs that were found on a list of paedophiles. There was a big internet paedophile case, and they identified a lot of MPs, and a D-notice was put on it straight away, so it couldn't be reported. And this was in Tony Blair's government, I believe it was around the time of the Iraq War. So this is what goes on with these people in power. And as you say, the Masons, if they are members of the Masons as well, then they can meet up with other pedophiles among the Masons, and they can rely on the Masons not to inform on them and not to grass them up, because they've got these blood oaths to protect them.
The Masons.
Yeah, most of the police are.
Yeah, I mean, the police, all the people in power are the Masons, so they all swear that blood oath. So it's like, you know, I mean, you get people like Rolf Harris and you know, they think they are above the law because, one, they probably are a Mason, but two, they have that protection of that high-powered government around them. It comes out too late for me. It should come out a lot earlier, and they should receive the punishment. I know there's one or two in prison at the moment, but even that's not enough for me.
Well, it's like a parallel society that most people don't realise is operating alongside our society, and it operates in the government, and it operates in the media, and as you say, in the police. These Freemasons, they're part of one of the in the Scottish Rite. You know, they swear allegiance to the Jews to particularly help out the Jews.
Well, so, it's a Jewish organisation, isn't it? I mean, it's the same with communism and Zionism. They're all Jewish entities, as is Masonry. But like we were talking a little bit earlier on, there is a split now, which I'm going to mention in the new documentary, the new part, over in America, where people are probably wondering why there's been a bit of a fuss over America now doing a deal with Iran, and Israel obviously not happy about the situation. Well, basically what it boils down to is that, as I mentioned in part nine, Israel now look at Iran as the last bastion of a military enemy down there in a decimated now Middle East. And were keen to attack Iran when Bush was in. Bush was pushing just before he left office, but it didn't quite happen. And so now America are doing a deal with Iran, and you've seen Obama and Netanyahu falling out. And the simple reason for that is that the elites have a problem there with Israel, because they want to turn on to Russia, where Israel want to go for Iran. So there is a split there. And in the last time in the Congress, the last time that Netanyahu turned up and did a speech, he got 22 standing ovations. Well, the previous time to that, he got 29 standing ovations, which is not a lot in that, granted. Only the difference this time was 50 Democrats did not turn up. You couldn't tell from the TV because they situated everybody in a way which still looked full. But there were 50 Democrats that didn't turn up. And there's one point in his speech where he kind of mentioned Obama, and the following standing ovation was only half the room. So there's a definite split there. And in fact, people know of AIPAC, but there's actually another organisation there, Jewish lobbyists, called J Street, and they are for not attacking Iran. So there's a clash now between J Street and AIPAC, and you can look this up on the internet, and that is the reason, because the elites want to turn to Russia, and be happy just to seal a deal, a nuclear deal for now with Iran. So if anybody wants to go down that road and investigate, you know, I'm quite sure you'll find it interesting.
So they want to turn Russia into the big bogeyman now, whether it were Iran before.
Well, as you know, I mean, during the American Civil War, the Tsar of Russia helped to swing things by sending over his fleet, and the Rothschilds never forget it. And the Rothschilds never forget. And when Putin managed to take the Crimea, which was never the intention of the CIA, who were instigating all that revolt down there, and what's happened since with aligning with China and other people, and even talking about getting another currency up in a couple of years. This is the reason why they want to turn their attention to Russia. They don't forget these things.
Yeah, I noticed this week they're saying that the British Embassy is reopening in Iran. So they're definitely making moves to sorting things out with Iran, and I think you're right there that they're then going to turn all their eyes on Russia. But the thing is, Russia still have a good relationship with Iran.
Of course, they do. Yeah, I'm not saying Iran's going to get involved in all that. It's just the elites, I mean, they're all still Jews, of course. Like, you know, we're frustrated at Syria, for instance. That was another one which they won't forget Putin for. And obviously, with Russia there, it stops all the progress. But that is the last bastion of the white man and Christianity at the moment. So it's the only European country you can really call Christian.
Well, yeah, they had a massive a procession for the Tsar, I noticed the other day. Thousands of them walking through the rain, this Orthodox Church procession. Go on.
Can I just say, though, right, history does cause problems, because obviously there's a lot of feeling in Europe. I mean, again, a lot of people have been confused of why these... why the Jews in America were funding the Nazis when they were fighting the Russians. And the Russians are the ones which now promote family life and you know, against homosexuality. But yet, you know, these memories are hard to forget, because when these people down in the Ukraine remember how they suffered under the Russians, any Russian to them is an enemy, even though it's not the Russian that it used to be. So consequently, in Poland, for instance, in Warsaw, they had in the centre of Warsaw, they had this big rainbow thing, you know, dedicated to this new homosexuality. And a lot of Polish nationalists apparently tore it all down, and the police stood by and clapped. But the following day, the same people attacked the Russian embassy. And that's because of this historical thing, which throws a lot of confusion up to a lot of people, because once they've torn that down, you know, the people in the Russian embassy would have agreed with that as well. But it's this historical thing which is still alive in people. It's only 70 years ago since the end of World War II. People suffered that badly under the Soviets that these memories don't go away that easy.
Well, it's like our government is run by the Jews, and you know, the British people are disliked in a lot of places around the world because of what our government have done. And even if we were to get rid of the Jews in the government, you know, people would still hold grudges against the British people for the way that they've been treated over the years. So, you know, you can understand it, and you can see why the Jews would be funding the nationalist groups in the Ukraine. Why the Ukraine nationalists would take the money, because they want the money.
They don't care, do they? I mean, Jews don't care who fights for them. I mean, look at ISIS. ISIS was an American invention, was funded and trained, and then for the sole purpose, because they were blocked from going into Syria by the veto of the Russians and the Chinese, they got this army to go into, funded the army, ISIS, to go into Syria to help take down Assad, and yet this then they turned then they turned on, oh, well, I think we'll have a bit of Iraq. Well, suddenly now, all of a sudden, Obama thinks I better start bombing these because they're going to take the oil fields. So it's a, it backfires on them. But yeah, you're quite right. It's they will deal with anybody, you know, and whether they're the Nazis or ISIS, they don't care.
Yeah,
I'll just shoot them just the same, you know.
Yeah, well, I'll just interject here and remind people, if they do want to call in, we do have a Skype channel that's open for people to call in. It's radio.stormer. If anyone does want to call in, then just give us a call. If you want to add anything to what we're discussing here, or what we're talking about here, we've got another 15 minutes of the programme left. So if anyone does want to call in, they are welcome to.
I believe the website was back up last week as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's under attack.
Yeah, it was a serious attack. I mean, we made a podcast with Andre, and he explained it all, and an hour and a half long podcast that people can find on the dailystormer.com website. And yeah, the very backbone of the internet shut us down, but you know, we've managed to defeat them. You know, with the help of Weave, computer programmer. And yeah, we've managed to get back online. There have been a few teething problems since then. A lot of the time we haven't actually been live. There's been Cloudflare checking people's browsers. But I believe we have also been under DDoS attack since getting back online. The same groups that used to attack us before have been trying to shut us down, so we've had to put Cloudflare up, but at the moment it's live. So if people are trying to reach the site and they're finding that Cloudflare is preventing them, just keep trying, and eventually Cloudflare will stop. I mean, it may take a couple of hours, you know, just check back later. As I say, it seems to all be working fine at the moment. I think there's also a problem with the embedded radio players. You can still download our content, but you can't actually stream it, but hopefully that will get fixed as well. And there's been a few issues with the site since we got back online, but they're all being ironed out, and the important thing is that we do still have our presence online, and we're just getting back to producing, you know, the normal amount of articles. Because also while this is going on, Andre's got to be concentrating on keeping the site online, and he hasn't got the time to write the articles. And also us writers and the other contributors to the site are unable to log in to you know, to actually upload our articles or write them, you know, on the page that, you know, in the dashboard page.
Well, so, it's a war on the internet, isn't it? Just the same.
Yeah, well, it's the same as the war out there, but at least on the internet we're able to get our voices heard. You know, in the same way that they tried to shut down the White Man March by hurling missiles and just through force of numbers, they tried to shut down, you know, the websites again through force of numbers with these DDoS attacks. But at least with the internet, you know, there's not so much a risk of physical violence, and we can, you know, we can defeat them because it's our intelligence against their intelligence, basically. And we've got some really hot, intelligent people on our side. You know, we were discussing this as well in the last podcast, that the, you know, we all the techno bods and the people programmers, they're all white. You know, we haven't got any Negro computer programmers, and our enemies are, you know, they're real sort of Untermensch that try to shut us down. So they're not using the highest tech to do it, and you know, we can find ways to beat them.
Well, we're talking about beating the system. Like I came across The Greatest Story Never Told, all 27 parts on YouTube the other day, from a friend of mine in Croatia, and he actually put the title up in Croatian. So I don't know whether that had anything to do with it, but all the parts were up, all 27.
Oh, fantastic. That's good news. So that managed to get around this thing that they were doing with the music.
Yeah, because everybody else has been trying to upload it, and it's been stopped from actually being uploaded. Whereas in this case, how long it's going to stay up for, I don't know. But all the 27 parts were up there.
Well, that's excellent. As I say, I'm surprised that they managed to do that.
So was I. I mean, you can't keep the truth down, this is the thing.
Well, I thought they were checking it for the music. I thought that the music had a certain frequency or signature. And when
maybe
they discovered that...
Maybe it's a different thing over in a different country, I don't know.
So looking at America and Britain, maybe. It just seems to me that, you know, whatever ways they do find to attack us...
There's always a way around.
Yeah, you know, we just get stronger in finding our ways to defeat them. Like this this attack where the backbone has, has prevented us from our server from connecting online. You know, this has happened before to 8chan and they've beaten it. And now we've beaten it. And, you know, that means that twice we've worked out ways to get around it. So it's going to become easier to work out these ways to get around it, and then when they try and use it on other sites, it's going to become easier and easier. The same as with the DDoS attack. When that first came out, you know, people were stumped. You know, that took the sites down, but eventually people worked their way around it, and they learn more about the internet and more ways to do things by doing it. It's like, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, doesn't it? That, you know, that's an old saying.
That's right. You mentioned something the other day about the Alex Jones thing. Now, I didn't know that had happened with David Jude, but you say he's took the parts down or something, has he?
Yeah, that's the same thing, really. Yeah, David Duke went on the Alex Jones show. He totally wiped the floor with him. Quite an amazing thing to see. I mean, Alex Jones is proof that the Jews don't run things. Is he wheels out this Jew that he says is his boss, who then tries to list a few goyim that were involved with the banks at one time. And, you know, never mind the fact that the Rothschilds, who Alex Jones goes on about all the time, are Jews. But, this whole three-hour programme where they had this debate and David Duke...
That's a shame.
Everyone that called in was supporting David Duke. After that, he brought out an 11-minute version of it, cut down from 2 hours, and then it disappeared altogether. So, you know, you're not able to find it anywhere. I think there are some people have managed to record it and upload it from other areas, but officially on the Alex Jones website, it's as if it never existed.
This is a war.
Well, this is, you know, this is a communist thing, wasn't it? Was to, you know, redoctor photographs and pretend that things hadn't happened, that things didn't exist. It's right out of George Orwell's 1984.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, this thing goes right up to all quarters of life. For instance, the other day I read that Robin Williams' wife now can't afford to live in this £6 million mansion, which obviously she was left when Robin Williams died. And I always wondered about that case because it was suicide, and there was a similar thing happened to the Michael Jackson thing where he was worth more to him dead than alive, and his family, Michael Jackson's family at the moment, are getting paid something like £20,000 a month, and the whole estate and all the copyrights and all the albums and everything goes to the Sony record company. And this is something that they do quite often. I covered it in my Hollywood part in part 10 with one of the Hollywood actors went on had to get out because he was being attacked for certain things. And they would take his money out of the bank, and is it Quaid? I think it was Quaid. I think this is the Jews have a hold on all parts of life, and wherever there's money, you will find them.
Thankfully, we go by on donations. We're not beholden to anyone at the Daily Stormer. You know, it's our viewers and our readers and listeners that keep the site going.
And even stop that PayPal, don't they?
Yeah, well, they've stopped PayPal. You know, this is the other thing. You know, they talk about having free speech and you have a right to spend your money, like these queers have a right to spend their money in the bakers, even though if the bakers' religious sensibilities say they don't want to ice a queer cake. And yet somehow PayPal can refuse to accept our money, and yet PayPal have a monopoly online. So I think there's a strong case to be had against that, which hopefully will end up happening at some point, a class lawsuit, because they've done it to a lot of people. I mean, ISIS can still use PayPal. But people whose politics, people whose politics they disagree with can't. And it's the same thing with this taking down offline. You know, you're supposed to have free speech. The internet is supposed to be guaranteed for free speech. This is why every website can go up there, and the big sites aren't allowed to hog all the bandwidth. You know, you can pay for extra bandwidth, but you're not priced out of the market. So it's supposed to be free for people to have their voices heard, and to take the Daily Stormer down like that. It's the first time a site has ever been taken down for the politics of it. And this is just like communist Russia was. This is just like the USSR was. There was no dissent allowed. No books, no speeches, nothing that contradicted what the Soviets had to say.
There's only free speech if the powers that be agree with you. Simple. Because they won the war, you know, they make the rules, they make the laws. Somebody left a comment the other day, like criticising me, saying that Germany was occupied. I live in Germany. It's not occupied. The people are that blind, that ignorant of history. It sometimes amazes me.
Well, I think Germany has been occupied since the war, isn't it? You know, by the Allies.
They're not going to give a country back to conquer, are they? Not when they can milk everything it's got. But people can't see the wood for the trees at times. Iraq's the same. Iraq's exactly the same. They left enough laws there for America to benefit Iraq for the next century and more, probably.
No, they can. They're free to do what they want, so long as it doesn't contradict what the people in charge are saying. That they pretend that they're not in charge. Same thing with this white man march. You know, the people that were throwing the missiles and were saying, you know, we've got to stop this march, are the ones that are saying, you know, we need to have free speech and democracy, and everyone needs to have their voice heard. You know, everyone needs to have their voice heard if they're not white. But as soon as a white man wants to have his voice heard, as soon as a white man wants to have a march and speak to the public, then, you know, we've got to stop that by all means necessary. And seriously, by all means necessary, you know. They were throwing rocks at them, you know.
If you think what would have happened if National Socialism had won the war, communism won't exist today. So all you got to do is reverse things, and this is why these things are happening, where anything anti-communist is stamped down on straight away, because communism won World War II. So it shouldn't surprise a lot of people that this happens, and the speech of National Socialists, or why there's a quest to imprison a 95-year-old ex-SS officer. You know, it's simply because they won the war, they've made the rules, and if you say what they want you to say, then you're fine, or if they're quite happy with what you're saying. But if as soon as they're not happy with what you're saying, down comes the communist red boot, which, as they found out at the march on the weekend.
Well, also at this march, you could see the flags. They were flying communist flags, openly flying, you know, the red flag with the communist star on it, despite all these millions murdered by this, this horrific regime that butchered tens of millions of white Christians. That these people are still allowed to march waving their flag, and yet sight of a swastika anywhere is, lock them up.
Exactly. Well, if you see a T-shirt Che Guevara, nothing said. You know, it's a communist freedom fighter, whatever. But anything to do with National Socialism, like, you know, it's either banned or frowned on.
Well, Che Guevara is made into a pop culture icon.
Exactly.
Yeah. People that know nothing whatsoever about the history of communism will be, you know, they'll wear a Che Guevara T-shirt or have a Che Guevara poster, without any idea of what the history of it is.
And without any comeback.
And you've got these same groups that are attacking the White Man March, the UAF and Hope Not Hate, that have all got members from the SWP, the Socialist Workers Party, and the Communist Party in them. These groups are funded by the government. They're funded by Unite, unions. David Cameron is a member of Unite Against Fascism. Now, these groups are funded directly by the government, and yet they think that they are an alternative to the government. They think that they are you know, putting down, you know, these horrible racists that are to do with the state. And we are the only true alternative, that's, and that's well, why that's our defense. Speech gets yeah. silenced.
Correct. But put it this way, if you had a an anti-fascist protester and a right-wing protester in court in front of a judge today, I don't care what the situation is, how, when, or where, but I know what that judge is gonna come down with the result for, who's come down with the result for, because the government pushed communism.
Yeah, they are communists.
So we have real rights, really, you know, because at the end of the day, I mean, even in Germany, you know, you can't plead not guilty for denying the Holocaust, because they make the rules up there, you can only plead guilty.
Yeah, well, thankfully, I don't think there was anyone arrested from this National Action March, White Man March. I think they just stopped it. And they have proved a point. Yeah, they have proved a point. They proved yeah. a point that, you know, that the white man, they will do all they can to stop the white man speaking. But they won't stop us speaking, because as you can hear, we are speaking now, and we've got our voice on the internet, and people can find this, the people can listen to us live now, or they can download the podcast later, or they can listen to the repeat in a few hours' time. But we should round up the programme now, Dennis.
Been a pleasure again. I can now catch up on some sleep.
Yeah, well, thanks for being on. You can find Dennis's work at Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, and Communism by the Back Door. If you're listening live now, you've got Stormfront Radio coming up next live, and then Dr. David Duke. So thank you very much for listening, and please do tune in again next time.
Tuned in to Radio Stormer on the Daily Stormer.